Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1.5 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
Tyler and I are joined today by Roger and Lauren Warkentine. They are our fourth and final guests in this series on stewarding generational wealth. As with the other episodes in this series, Scott joined to help guide the conversation. Roger is Lauren's father and the founder of ComputerRx. Lauren, who grew up in the family business and began a professional career there, is now blazing her own entrepreneurial path.
Wow, these two are fantastic, and I couldn't think of a better way to end this series. There was so much content and so much good discussion that we're going to most likely break this into two parts just so we don't have to cut any part of it out. So this will be part one, and then we'll get part two pushed out here, hopefully in a couple of days. They were fantastic. Dexter, you and Scott did a good job. I think my favorite part was watching Roger's wife, Carol, sat off to the corner of the room, but provided her own input. So Carol, we're going to get you on a podcast at some point. I know Scott was relaying what you were trying to say, but it was a blast to have you in the room with us as well. So these two are fantastic. And I can't think of a better way to end the series.
I know you'll enjoy this first part of our conversation. I hope it serves you along your journey. Roger and Lauren, thanks for making the time to come by today and share your story. Scott, when we said that we were doing a series on this stewardship of generational wealth, these two immediately came to mind for you as potential guests. With that in mind, would you please introduce them?
Happy to do it. Roger and his wife, Carol, and his daughter, Lauren, and I have shared a personal relationship as friends for about 18 months. I got to know them. And the thing that when we started talking about this series that made me think of them immediately is their business was absolutely a family enterprise. Both Roger and Carol ran the business, and all of their children for a time worked within the business. Lauren was intimately involved with the management of the business, and I think their story is compelling for a number of reasons. When we did my podcast, I talked a little bit about what I think are really important for people to keep perspective on, and the things that I talked about were introspection and humility. When I think about Roger and Carol and Lauren, the other word that comes to mind, which I say with complete and deep respect, is contentment. I think that's the element that they really add to this conversation, this dialogue we've had with a number of folks about wealth and business succession and planning is, you know, you can have introspection and humility, which are very, very important in my opinion. But when you get to know Roger and Lauren, what you know about them is that they are very content people. They're very confident in their own skin. They know who they are, and they have a great story to tell. So I'm excited to have them here to help tell that story for us.
Roger, anything that he left out there?
No, not really. I'm a little bit surprised that he thinks that we have such a great story. But I can start off by saying that the business started off more as a hobby. I'm a pharmacist and own my own drugstore. I purchased a computer system in 1981, 82, somewhere in that time frame. It's been an
It was a MacBook Pro, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought
It was actually a Tandy Model 2.
No one knows what that is. Roger, you're going to have to give a little explanation.
This was one of the first business computers on the market.
What was the size of this computer
compared to this room?
Well, it actually wasn't that large. The had a 8-megabyte hard drive, which at that time was massive. Had a whopping 64 megs of RAM. I'm sorry, 64 kilobytes of RAM.
Oh, wow.
And obviously a black and white screen, 8.5-inch floppy drives. I purchased the system, and when I purchased it, I had some requirements that I thought they needed to do. My drugstore was in an area of elderly people. The print size on the labels was too small, and they promised me that they could increase that font size, which never happened. And one day, something had happened on the computer system. The programmer on this was also a computer science professor at OSAO in Chickasha, mm-hmm. and couldn't leave. So she called me on the phone and gave me the instructions to get into the software and told me how to make the changes. And while in the course of doing that, I thought, this isn't that tough. And I thought, okay, I started reading tinkering, and I made those changes that needed to be made on the print size. Something pretty simple. Computers in those days were very simple. IBM PCs weren't out yet. I hate to date myself that much.
I think you did that when you said 8 megabytes. But sorry, but keep going, please.
The IBM PC wasn't released yet. Oh, by the way, that 8 megabyte hard drive cost $4,400. And it was 24 inches square, 8 inches high. And when you moved it to lock the hard drive down, there was a Phillips screw on the bottom. You had to get underneath it and tighten the screw down to lock the heads down so you could move it.
I did that this morning when I came into the office. I had to tighten the screw on my computer.
But anyway, things, I started tinkering with it. And most of the software in those days really wasn't geared to pharmacy.
If I can, can I pause you there? Because I really want to hear about the origin of Computer X. But Lauren, anything we missed out on introducing you here? You haven't had a chance to speak yet. I saw you shaking your head and kind of laughing a little bit there as he was talking.
No, nothing to add. I was laughing because you still had the Tandy.
Yes.
Until, do you still have it?
No. I left.
He had you it. Got rid of that?
He had it until a couple of years
I
ago.
I bet no. You wish you would have kept that.
I had it until May.
Well, you got rid of it? That's all I have to add. I thought he still had it.
It was in the office when we sold it, and I didn't go get it.
Oh, we got to go get that. We'll go get that.
But so coming back to what we said originally with being guests on a podcast about business succession plans, someone had to start a business, and that was obviously, Roger, you and your wife, Carol. So you kind of were getting into it, but how did Computer RX, when did it kind of move from an idea? You talked about the issue with the print size there on the pharmacy labels.
Well, we continued doing, I made a lot of changes to the software and actually gave them back to the company. Most pharmacies around needed those changes.
The software was that came with the computer was helping you manage the pharmacy.
In those days, it printed the labels. We could look up people's prescriptions by name, which was a big plus. You didn't have to have your RX number when you came in to get a refill. And prior to that, you almost everybody had to. Very few pharmacies were computerized in those days. The Walgreens, the Walmarts were not computerized either. They just didn't exist hardly.
Right.
It was just in the infancy of the computer realm in the world. They didn't do a lot, but what they did do wasn't very good. And they also clearly had never worked in a pharmacy, did not understand the workflow process, how things went, what you needed to do. And I started doing some of that and then decided that I think I can do a better job. I knew enough programming by then that I could do a better job than they're doing.
You got to the point where you were sending them fixes.
Yes.
For their own software, right? You taught yourself
right.
How to program.
That's correct.
And you were sending your own patches for them to share, which they were appreciative of, I'm sure.
Not enough. But in the course of doing that, met some of the other pharmacists that owned the system, and we were talking about what needed to be there, and I realized I wasn't the only one that was upset with what's going on. There was no other alternatives, too. This one was probably one of the better ones available, and it was terrible. And I just said, why? Why does it have to be that way? Programming at that point was not as difficult as it would be today to start. Computers didn't do that much stuff. And that's when we kind of started doing it on our own. We ran this out of our house. Actually, our dining room table was the office.
Mm-hmm. Well, now wait, did that start before you sold the pharmacy?
Yes.
So you were operating out of your house even while you still ran it?
Yes.
Was that just to kind of separate the two?
Actually, I had an office at the pharmacy, computer office.
Right.
But we worked at home too.
If I may, who all is the we here? Is that
Carol?
You? Okay. So yeah. Was there anyone else or this was a Roger and Carol enterprise?
Yes. Then we had
Roger and Carol Inc.
Yes.
Which sidebar, I'm not going to say the name of the pharmacy just because, you know, Roger hasn't said it yet. I don't want to share anything he doesn't want to share. But the interesting part of this story is what a small world this is. So my parents owned a paint and wallpaper business that was right next door to the pharmacy that Roger and Carol owned. And there is a very good chance, given our proximity and age, Lauren and I, that we probably saw each other as children, you know, in the parking lot of this shopping center where both these businesses were. And I probably went into the pharmacy at some point as a kid. Anyway.
I do feel like I should add to that. You probably saw my siblings because I'm much younger than you.
Oh, stop. Fine. I saw your siblings there.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and Scott, I can also tell you your parents traded at the pharmacy. It was Hillcrest Drug, and his parents owned Hillcrest Paint and Paper. And I filled their prescriptions and probably some for Scott. Probably chased him out of the store.
if I was in the store at that age, you should have chased me out immediately. Yes. Yeah.
But I was working there, trying out my ideas, and then we'd do stuff at home. In about 1983, Tandy came out with the Tandy 2000, which was...
Ooh, the Tandy 2000.
2000, yes. Mm-hmm. Well...
He had that one, too.
I have that one, too.
You have it still?
Yes.
Okay, I'm getting your Tandy back. Keep going.
Anyway, what we were doing, all of our software was running on a Model 2, and we ported the data from the Model 2 to the Tandy 2000, which another term probably most of you aren't familiar with is the Model 2 ran on an operating system called TrisDOS, which was Tandy Radio Shack DOS.
You just said DOS and Radio Shack in the same sentence.
Yes.
Keep going.
And the Tandy 2000 ran on Microsoft DOS, incompatible operating systems.
Okay.
But we found a way to move the data, which was a very, at those times, a very interesting thing, because that's what we really did in our dining room. We had a Model 2 from a customer set up, moving the data to a Tandy 2000, and that was a very slow process. I mean, we're talking about a 4.77 megahertz processor.
Does it have a flux capacitor?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
How much do you remember about that computer, Lauren?
I was not alive yet, so no.
Okay.
I was not an idea yet.
Unfortunately, in those days...
Hey, Lauren, we're not going to make you say your age on the tape, so don't worry.
The UPSs weren't available, so we did not have the power supplies. And when the data transfer started, it had to go to completion. There was no starting and stopping. And many days, if we'd started, we had to be weather aware before we started this because it also took 24 hours. We could not have power fluctuations. A couple of times it did happen. And we had to start all over.
I got frustrated this morning because I had to restart my computer. It took 2.5 minutes. I was very upset.
Yes.
If you don't mind me asking, what was Carol's either direct or indirect contribution during this? Is growth phase the correct terminology?
She handled all of the billing, receivables, payables, collections, which in the early stages wasn't a lot because we didn't have many customers. We continued on doing this until 1988. And at that point, I sold the drugstore that I had to one of the customers that I had. And the realization came that I needed to get out of the drugstore. Again, I was a single pharmacist pharmacy, and I couldn't really leave the store. And working after hours on the software, pharmacists, again, word of mouth, would call and want a demonstration of what we could do. And in 1988, I turned down 6 demonstrations in December. December is also the busiest month in the drugstore. Carol had a large gift business in our drugstore, and so it was really a big business for us. And I couldn't leave for that. And I thought, this is crazy. Drugstores aren't very profitable. You have to count on a lot of volume and do that. Selling computer systems was reasonably profitable. We sold the software and the hardware, and I did not go on 6 appointments because I was afraid they would buy the system and I had no time to install it. There was just 2 of us. I was the installer, the programmer, the trainer, the tech support, and I didn't have time. And one of my customers realized that, and he said, let me buy your store. He also owned several pharmacies, and he said, I know why you need out. Let me buy your store. And that was in August of 1988.
How hard or easy was it to accept that offer and go full-time with your computer business at that point?
Scary as the world. Carol and I said we'd give it 6 months, and see if we could make it.
Now, wait, did you say that you were going to give it 6 months before or after you'd agreed to sell the store?
Kind of after we agreed to sell the store. Then
I remembered that right.
The shock comes in that I don't have a paycheck coming in.
How many kids did you have at that point?
Two.
Okay, so two kids, no paycheck.
Carol was pregnant with Lauren.
We said we weren't going to.
People can do math.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lauren. It wasn't me. It was your dad.
Well, and she was, what, 7 months pregnant?
Yeah. She was.
That was 2 months later.
Yeah. Lauren was born 2 months later. It was a very frightening thought. I had actually, up to this point, never cold called stores to sell. Everything I did at that point, people were calling and wanting to see the software. And I'm not a salesman. As a pharmacist, I could relate to the stores. I could tell them what I thought was important in the software. And fortunately, most of the people I talked to agreed that that's, at the time, that's what they needed. We had a lot of things in the software that I did that would help a pharmacist run their business, not just help fill prescriptions, which at that time, that's basically most all the software did was track people's prescriptions so that it made it convenient. I did little things like putting notes on patients. When I was at the drugstore, I was an independent pharmacist, and one of the most important things is getting to know your customers. Well, that's incredibly difficult if you have a good number of customers. So if somebody would come in and tell me their dog was sick, I would click it in my notes. I had made notes on patients. They come back into the pharmacy, I'd ask them how their dog was.
And you say you're not a good salesman.
And
come on.
Things like that. And those things sold real well to customers because they realized that's exactly what the pharmacist needed to do. Things progressed.
Well, at that point, right, pharmacies were almost, I mean, they were akin to a neighborhood corner store.
Yes.
So all the people that were coming into your store, people that probably lived within a 3 mile radius or something, or, you know, whatever the number was, but they were your neighbors.
Yeah. You mentioned the gift store that Carol operated.
Yeah.
Yes. And things like that. The Walgreens was still a fairly small. CVS didn't exist at that time. Revco was a common chain. Walmart was just getting into the business, but most of the Walmart pharmacies were actually leased to independent people.
That were running them.
Yes.
Yeah.
That stopped, quite honestly, because of a pharmacy here in Edmond. Had a major lawsuit.
So what was the growth like? How many customers did you have whenever you sold the pharmacy? And then how quick did it kind of pick up? Was there a hockey stick? Was it exponential? Kind of walk me through what that was like.
When we sold the pharmacy, I'm thinking probably 20, 25 customers.
And just to be clear, these were 20 to 25 customers of Computer RX.
Right.
Okay. Just got
yes.
it. Okay.
20 to 25 customers.
And you felt like that was enough, that it emboldened you, that you thought, I can build this.
Yes.
And how many did Carol think was enough?
Well, at that time, we had pretty much decided that if we could get to 100, we would be okay. That would replace the income that we were getting from the pharmacy.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. So you had a target.
Yes.
And since Carol can't defend herself, she's in the room here, but she can't defend herself because she doesn't have a microphone. What I'll say is—
By her own choice.
That's fair. Yep. What I will say, though, is that if, for those of us that have read the book, The Millionaire Next Door, there is a chapter in that book that talks about business owner families, and it talks about the role that in every successful small business, there is a person who is really good at building wealth. But in order for them to be successful, there has to be somebody who's really good. And it is usually, ironically, or maybe not ironically, it is usually the female of the relationship, the wife, that is better at this of keeping the money. So it is made and then collected and held on to tightly. Carol is, when they wrote that book, they were talking about Carol. Yeah. She was the great collector, as I understand it. Is
yes.
that fair?
Carol would override us many times on expenditures.
When you say us, did you mean you?
Well, yeah.
Can you recall any specific instances where you came and the finance committee, if you will, said no?
Early on, no. After Computer X got much larger every day, it was almost a common thing, particularly in our sales and marketing department, that they had to prepare something to convince Carol to let go of some money to something that they wanted. And if they couldn't do that, it wasn't going to happen.
We knew how to keep the finance committee in good graces.
And again, to be clear, the finance committee is a committee of one.
Yes.
And her name is Carol. So real quick, though, because you jumped a couple things. So when you left, you had 25 customers. You began the growth of the business. To Dexter's question, how quickly did that grow? And then fast forward to kind of the entry of, give us kind of the facts and figures as it grew, as the business evolved, up to the point where the kids begin to work there. I think it'd probably be good.
Right. We grew enough in probably 94, so that's 6 years, to add an employee.
Your first employee?
Yes.
Non-family, just non-fam- it was you, Carol, and this person?
Yes.
Okay.
And then we had probably 75 customers in that time frame. Computers in those days were problematic. They went down a lot. So at that point, we hired another employee to make routine maintenance trips to our pharmacies.
Were most of your customers at this point, were they?
Local.
They were local?
Local.
Okay.
They were all in Oklahoma. Some of them had gotten a little farther out, southeastern Oklahoma. Part of the thing that happened there, we picked up a customer in Idabel. No, I'm sorry, it's Hugo, Welfare Pharmacy. And because of that, he was probably the largest pharmacy in Oklahoma doing welfare,
okay,
billing the state of Oklahoma. I worked pretty hard at it and got really good at the billing aspect of it. And because that was normally a major problem for pharmacies, we had gotten the computer system to do that. So within a year's time period, the Hugo, Idabel, Antlers, Atoka, that area, I had all the pharmacies in that area. So we had a cluster of people because that's pretty heavy welfare country. And then the 94, 95, 96 time frame, we had a competitor that was not doing a very good job. And we started, we were able to convert their data into our format. And so we picked up several Oklahoma stores that way. And so we grew a little bit. We added a couple of more people, a salesperson, actually a sales and an installer, because up to that point, I was doing the installing, the training. We had one of the first mobile phones installed in the car because I was driving to southeast Oklahoma. I couldn't be out of pocket for 3 or 4 hours. I took tech support calls on the drives. So
right.
we hired an installer, and he became kind of a salesman. And at that point,
Carol's adding from the peanut gallery that you added another office.
As in, like,
you expanded
from the living room to the spare bedroom kind of extra office?
No. We had a physical office now. We rented a 700-square-foot office.
Oh, what year was that?
94.
Okay.
Do you remember when the 100th customer came on board? Because I remember you saying earlier that was the number that replaced your previous income.
No, we went pretty quickly to numbers higher than that. We went to a couple of hundred in about 2000. So you can see this was not a real quick go. In about 2000, 2001, we grew pretty fast. In that time frame, we grew to maybe, 700, way beyond what we had hoped. And at that point, we had several employees.
So at some point here, you've crossed over. You got 700, you say employees or customers?
No, customers.
700 customers, excuse me. This is something. This is a real business. And when does transition, succession, kind of how much of that was on your mind versus just trying to, I've heard it described as the daily knife fight of running your own business?
The transition was several years later. At this point, we were trying to run the business, trying to just keep things going. And a lot of things happened during that time frame. Pharmacy is a highly controlled business. The FDA, the insurance companies. Right now, the insurance companies control more what happens than state laws, federal laws, etc. It becomes more difficult to deal with. And during that time frame, there were a lot of small independent software companies. The commitment to program to those rules and regs is pretty daunting, and a lot of them chose not to do it.
That thinned the herd out for you pretty nicely.
Yes, it did. My commitment was whatever the laws were we were going to do. And we committed that to our customers, that you don't have to switch. We will do what it takes. In that time frame, between 1984 and probably 90, every customer that we sold to had never owned a computer before. The big challenge was convincing them they needed one. From 94, we would sell a few new people. Almost everything else was conversion of an existing software that wouldn't do what they needed. And some of the larger companies at that time were becoming pretty arrogant and wouldn't listen to customers. In 2001, 2002, somewhere in that time frame, we had a customer in South Texas. At that point, we had also expanded quite a bit into Texas. That existing their computer died, and their existing software vendor wouldn't help them, told them it would be 2 or 3 weeks before they could get somebody down there to try to help fix their computer. She called us, and we told her we really couldn't get anybody down there in the next day or two because we didn't have a trainer. At that point, Eric, as her oldest son, had just started working for us, had zero experience on training. She said, I will take anybody. I'm down and I can't run my business. So Eric went down, was on the phone, and we
So that was the first involvement of the next generation.
Yes.
Was
we walked him through training her on the phone.
His side of the story is hilarious.
I would really like to hear more about that, and as well as the kids' involvement. So if we could, I'd like to just take a brief pause right there, and then yeah, we'd kind of like to hear more about it without rushing you through that, if that's okay.
Sure.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.